Jeff Stein is our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books at Common Good Books in St. Paul, totallyiowa.com, iowawatch.org is his public service show that he's part of down in Iowa, and he joins us from the palatial broadcasting complex of KXEL Cedar Falls Waterloo on a Wednesday. Hi, Jeff.
Greetings from my station, Zebra.
You guys got it pretty bad down there, too. I mean, we're a few degrees colder than you, but not too much.
I love how all of the Minnesotans who work in Iowa are now saying, this is nothing. 25 below air temperature, 55 below wind chill. I used to walk 3 miles to school in that every day. Like, all right, fine.
Well, no, they didn't. But we used to hit it every once in a while. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, we had it down like minus 27 one day. I don't think they canceled school either, which is just there's a reason why the lifespan of the average human in the United States is a lot bigger than it used to be. Let's just put it that way.
Well, we literally did hit a record low of minus 25 where I'm sitting. It's supposed to be minus 30 tonight. Yeah. And in many areas of the state, it could be all-time lows, not just a record low for a certain date in history, but all-time. 31 below in Cedar Rapids, perhaps. But, you know, when you get to this level, you might as well set the record, right?
I need you to do me a favor. Next week when we talk, find out what the fastest temperature turnaround in the state's history is. Because if you're like us, we're on Saturday and Sunday, we're going to be up in the near 40. And I would love to find out what the fastest turnaround from something that cold to that warm in the history of Iowa, if you can find it.
Oh, sure. I got nothing else to do but do your legwork.
Perfect.
Holy cow. I mean, I recall there was a time when I was younger and lived a faster life that we left the airport at the Virgin Islands and then flew into Iowa, and it was a 101-degree air temperature change from where we left to where we showed up. Mm-hmm. That would be my personal record. Will that suffice?
Sure,
this little homework assignment?
Oh, you don't have time. I'm not like a TV weather guy that has tons of time to do all sorts of things. I'm actually a working guy.
And interns. TV people have all of these interns to do this stuff.
Actually, that's a good point. Yeah.
I'll find out for you, Matt.
Thanks. Hey, thanks, Jeff. Our crack staff down there in Iowa.
That's right, the Iowa Bureau.
Yeah, to talk about cracked. Let's go with Roger Stone first. Okay. Can I want to make your personal opinion about the documents of the charges that were being levied against him. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I didn't see a fishing expedition. That was the first time I said, Mueller knows everything. He's just dotting I's and crossing T's right now and trying to make the most airtight case he can. It did not seem like, I mean, some people are like, will he get Roger Stone to flip? He's like, I don't think it matters on Stone, because from what I saw under those documents, Mueller seems to know pretty much exactly what happened.
You may recall that in my effort to bring a variety of voices to the radio here, I have talked to Roger Stone. And this is, I think, was back in March. He had a book that came out about, you know, how to be a well-dressed individual. Not kidding. That's what it was about.
Wow.
And I asked him about this whole thing because it was obviously in the news. And he was very defiant. I will never roll on this president. I am loyal, blah, blah, blah. And now comes word, well, yeah, you know, I talk to Mueller if he wants to talk. Happy to tell him anything. I don't know anything, of course, but I'm happy to. That is a clue to the Mueller side that Stone will roll like a boulder rolling down a hill. And I love the way that he immediately turned on Jerome Corsi.
Oh, yeah.
Who, by the way, I'm going to be talking to again Friday on the radio, who now says, I'd be happy to testify against Stone. There is no honor among thieves, and this is really playing out. Because again, let's not forget, Michael Flynn's sentencing has been postponed. Michael Cohen is now again going to testify before Congress. There's an awful lot of stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the folks on the right would say, look, they threatened Corsi, but they didn't have the goods, so he has not been indicted. Instead, they went after Stone. Well, Is that with Corsi's cooperation or corroboration? In other words, they're saying, well, see, this is all just crimes that had nothing to do with collusion, had nothing to do with the president. Okay, but let's see, because no matter what the acting attorney general said yesterday about the investigation just about being done, if it's just about done, you don't get the grand jury extended for 6 months, you do it for 3 months.
Yeah.
So how he knows that. Beyond that, I don't think that anybody on the right side of the ledger ought to be, you know, wiping sweat from their brow saying, whew, that was close. They got Roger Stone and that's the end of it.
No, and the documents really do kind of start pointing to it might be Steve Bannon, it might be Donald Trump Jr., it might be Trump himself, but it's one, or it could be Kushner. It's one of those four is clearly the person they're referencing in the documents of telling Stone to go back to WikiLeaks and find out more information about the leaks from the Russians. And regardless, I mean, and like I said, I know what you're talking about with these Republicans that have tried to dismiss this, saying, "Oh, they just went after Roger." Oh. These are indictments. You don't just this is not stuff you pull out of thin air. You have actual tangible evidence against the guy. And I think that Stone. A lot of people have been talking about this. A lot of people who are legal analysts have said the same thing, is that with the charges, the indictments that are being brought against him. Mm-hmm. That the reality is that he's going to jail for pretty much the rest of his life, that he is not going to get out. And that's, even if half of them come to fruition, that's the best he can hope for. And so the question then becomes, as you said, is like when you're facing down, it's one thing to say, I'm standing by my guy. But another thing, when you're facing down the long highway and realizing you standing by that one guy either means you've got to pray that you get a pardon or... And there are no state charges filed anywhere against you because those can't get pardoned by the president, or basically that you have to roll and help out the prosecution.
Well, one of the things, first of all, when you come out of your initial appearance and you do the Nixon helicopter wave.
Yeah.
I understand the loyalty that Stone has for Nixon and all of that, but I'm not sure that's inspiring confidence in any of your supporters. Okay, so that's A. B, if in fact every indictment so far talks about lying to authorities, and that's consciously lying, not just I didn't remember. These are crimes of intent against Stone. Okay, so all of these crimes have to do with lying, and people are saying, well, see, it has nothing to do with collusion. It has to do with them not being truthful. Well, I don't think you have to be the strongest legal mind to suggest that there might be a connection. In other words, if all of these people are lying about things, then why are they all lying about something? What is it that they are lying about? And if you have that many people, somebody, maybe Cohen, is bound to roll. Yes, anytime somebody pleads guilty to perjury, they are not as effective a witness themselves in court. I know this is a defense attorney. That's what you would do to impeach them, is to say, well, were you lying then or lying now? Okay, you've seen TV. You know how that works. But the fact is, they don't have to have Cohen, for example, testify. Cohen can simply deliver material that speaks for itself, that makes the case itself, and then you don't have this issue. So, yes, it is true that people like Manafort are at the Gray Bar Hotel because of their misdeeds going back decades, including money laundering. Fine, but it also shows that the chief executive of the United States was not exactly surrounding himself with the cream of the crop.
And you bring up that point. Let's go back to when Flynn was getting sentenced. Mm-hmm. And the judge basically looks at him and it's like, I'm paying attention to your media presentations, and your media presentations say you were lied to and you were tricked. Do you want to recant your plea here? And, frantically, the lawyers and Flynn himself begging the judge, no, we're good with the plea. We're good with the plea. We're not going to back out of this. We're good with the plea. And even the judge saying, I'll tell you what, why don't you take some time to think about it? I mean, if this is what you're saying, and it's that moment when these guys are there is no other option. And I have no doubt Roger Stone's going to try to lie to the Mueller people. I really don't. I mean, I have zero doubt that he might pretend to be working with them and then try to feed them a bunch of lies, which Mueller's not going to have anything about it. And there's going to come a point where they're in a courtroom and a judge is looking at him and saying, "What's your story?" And at that point, it's over. And I think that that's the one thing all these people are terrified of is that moment, is that there comes a moment where they have to actually. Am I going to stand with Trump or do I really accept this and try to get the best deal I can?
Cohen has been the one who has been the most obvious about that, right? I mean, he's doing the interview saying, "My only loyalty is to my family. I got sucked in by this guy. It's my fault." And he's hoping that he can do better than the 3 years that he's going to be doing and that he'll get to keep some assets. You'll notice Flynn. Supposedly, he took a deal when it looked like his son was going to be implicated.
Yes.
So, again, there is a point at which everyone will bend. The question is, are they bending truthfully or are they making up a story? And this, I'm not just talking about these people. That's always the thing you look at, right? Are they talking because they're going to get a good deal and therefore they have seen the light of clarity to tell the truth, or are they making something up in order to get a better deal? You got to think somebody like Cohen has all sorts of information to corroborate whatever it is he is saying. Flynn, there were some recordings. I mean, there are all these things. Now Stone, you know, in what I would call a rather Nixonian way, might see himself as a hero for selling out Trump. I mean, do you see how weird this all gets?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the more defiant they are, I mean, he just believes he's right. He and Corsi were thick as thieves until all of a sudden Corsi apparently testified or provided information that undercut Stone. Now, all of a sudden, well, I don't know why Corsi would say these things. Well, maybe because they're true. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just a thought.
And
that gets to the point of why is Corsi not in handcuffs right now? Maybe because of the fact that they got the information, he corroborated the information, you know, and if you believe Corsi, they were trying to get him for not remembering one email, and then he amended his statement, and so technically there's no intent. Okay, but again, all roads lead to these people who it's amazing how they beat their chest and yell from the mountaintop how influential they are. How close they are to Trump, et cetera, until all of a sudden it starts falling apart, and then they minimize their impact. Well, you know, it's coming. I'm nothing. And then, of course, the White House couldn't get away any faster if the entire building was on fire.
Yeah, and I loved Sarah Huckabee Sanders out there with these people have nothing to do with the president. Oh, of course, sure. One final question on this before we take a break. Do you think the next indictment handed down is going to be one of the big names?
Define big. Do you mean Trump family? Do you mean
Trump Jr., Bannon, Kushner, or Trump himself?
It will not be Trump himself ever on this. And the reason I say that is they're not going to go down the road of untested legal theory. Can you indict a sitting president? What Mueller will do is get everybody else and say to the House Democrats, here's your blueprint for impeachment. So it will not be the president while he is in office. I think Bannon would be more likely than one of the Trump family members. And that's just because of history. The Trump family members may have their own issues in terms of skullduggery in business. But I think Bannon is a much deeper and broader individual. But, you know, at some point, I don't know. There's just this part of me that thinks that Stone, in order to save his own silver toupee, may be a key figure here. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he's coming on, denying everything, and then saying, I'll be happy to talk to the independent counsel. Okay, well, what does that tell us? It tells us the two masks, the two faces are at work.
Well, and they, like I said, when I read through those paperwork with those indictments, they didn't seem like they were on a fishing expedition anymore. It seemed like, okay, we're going to see how airtight we can make this case. And that's where I think Roger Stone is at. I think that's where this is now changing.
You're exactly right. It's very specific.
Yeah.
You cannot just simply say we're going to come up with some silly little indictment and hope that you talk. And again, it's an indictment, which means grand jurors made the decision. Yes, they only hear evidence from the prosecutor. That's how the process works. But it's not just Mueller or one of his designees writing up charges. Mm-hmm. A grand jury returned an indictment.
Let's take a break. Come on back. We'll talk about the end of the first shutdown and whether we'll have a second shutdown. Jeff Stein joining us, talking national politics, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Vacuum cleaner. You buy them, you break them, and then you throw them away, right? Well, if you're ready to break out of that vicious cycle, we have the answer. Ever heard of A1 Vacuum? They've been around forever, offering better alternatives. So if you're ready to stop filling the landfill, give A1 Vacuum a shot. Located in Roseville and ready to show you something better. Find them at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316. Better yet, drop by.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Standard Heating is celebrating 89 years in business this January, but you get all the gifts, like saving $1,900 on a high-efficiency furnace and AC or boiler. In addition to providing year-round comfort for your family, you'll also enjoy lower energy bills. That's certainly worth celebrating. Learn how you can save $1,900 on your new furnace and AC or boiler, and other anniversary savings at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Hey, it's Hunter from the brand new 4 o'clock program, the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. And if there's one thing y'all know that I always look forward to, it's a good party. And I couldn't be more excited for the 2019 Blue State Ball. Finally, a chance to celebrate the work we did destroying Trump and the Republicans and keeping Minnesota the true blue state. But come celebrate our victory with fellow progressives, radio hosts, and politicians at the 2019 Blue State Ball, Saturday, March 2nd at the Blaisdell in Minneapolis. Tickets available now at am950radio.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us, talking national politics. The shutdown could not have ended worse, I think, for Trump, although they're trying to spin it the other way. And the reason why is that how it ended really seemed to be tied to all of a sudden LaGuardia saying, what was it, a third of the flights are canceled for the day. And within 3 hours, all of a sudden that shutdown was over. I mean, there was no caravan, no nothing. It didn't matter anymore. Flights were getting ended. And all of a sudden, if I'm the air traffic controllers or the TSA, and I'm saying to myself, well, how do I want to end this the next time? Well, all of a sudden, if they all did a general strike and everyone walked out and air traffic stopped for a day, I guarantee you no one would think about doing it again. Talk about Trump, because I think he is definitely hesitant to try to shut, as much as he says he's willing to, I can't believe he'd be willing to shut down the government again, especially in 3 weeks after the last shutdown.
I don't think he's interested in doing that, no. And Senator Grassley here in Iowa said to me on the radio, look, the president lost the leverage he had about the wall by reopening the government. However, he had no choice, and that Nancy Pelosi outplayed him on this. So what's going to happen is an awful lot of foot stomping and breath holding. And Nancy Pelosi is going to say, well, you go ahead and turn blue. Hold your breath. Turn blue. That's fine. Trump will say the Democrats are stopping a wall from being built. I'm declaring a national emergency, but I'm not going to shut down the government because these poor 800,000, you know, wonderful workers need to be paid, et cetera, et cetera. So he will be able to say there's no shutdown. I'm going to declare the emergency. Then it'll get tied up in court. He'll be able to win with his base politically, but it is a very poor excuse for governing. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think anybody even on the right can argue that point. Yes, the president may score with his base, and yes, that's a political win, but it is really crummy governing. And the only thing we can hope for is that as they get toward February 15th, and we get to the point of, all right, they're no closer than they were, that he throws in the towel, they fund the government through the end of the fiscal year, September 30th, the part that isn't already there, and that way we don't have to deal with this and just let the litigation take place, because that's the paralysis, right? You file a lawsuit, nothing's going to happen. Again, it's him declaring victory, but yet he's the one who caved.
One of the things I find is interesting, I was listening to Kennedy out of Louisiana, and this is not exactly a liberal. I mean, this guy is far-right conservative. No. And even he seems relegated to the option of, he knows that it's either shut down the government again or allow this, declaring a national emergency and doing it that way. Even though, and I think that he kind of was very apprehensive about this, because if Trump does win this fight, they have set precedent now. And, you know, it's all of a sudden, as someone said, well, what happens when the Democratic president claims a national emergency for climate change? And you can't really say, you know, oh, well, now that's a Pandora's box. That Pandora's box was already open. So, I mean, the Republicans themselves seem to be exasperated because they just don't know what to do with him, because the one thing that they won't do is tell him no.
Well, look at history here with the Senate, and you've got nuclear options with regard to judges. And one party started a nuclear option, the other one accelerated it. So both parties, all they need is 6 years of institutional memory. Both parties know what happens when you do something that changes these rules forever, because it may work for you today, but it's going to come back to haunt you in 2 or 4 years. So I don't think any in the legislature have the stomach for the fight, because of the fact that they know it can very nicely be used against them in the future. Trump is not looking about future. Trump is looking about the absolute moment. And that's the way he has acted in 2 years and 1 week in office.
And by the way, I would, you know, saying you're going to do something and actually doing it are two different things. The Republicans are basically holding that bag on the judges thing. But I will say,
No, not defending it at all, but I'm just saying that the point is, both sides can look and say, okay, this can be used against us, and that hurts a lot, and we don't want it to happen going forward. Oh, the number of judges now that have gotten steamrolled? Ugh.
Well, and I will say, too, as well, you know, when you look at something like this, is like the Supreme Court justice in an election year. You know as well as I do that if a Supreme Court seat comes open in 2020, McConnell's going to go back against his word. He'll find some way to say, well, the Democrats are forcing my hand, and jam someone on the court. I mean, it's not about actual standing by what you say. It's just about winning, and that's why it's going wrong. I got to stop there, though.
You're right. You're right.
Yeah, I got to stop there, and we got to get going. But Jeff Stone, once again, find his books at Common Good Books, totallyiowa.com. We'll spotlight this interview. Jeff, thank you very much. I'll post the Iowa Politics Report a little bit later on, okay?
Talk to you next week.
Take care.